Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Adoption Door. I'm your host, Andres, and this is a place of non-judgment where people can come to share their stories of adoption. Some stories are heartwarming, while others are absolutely gut-wrenching. Having said that, the sole purpose of this show is to help people gain a better understanding of adoption and what it's like for different people in different circumstances. Now, this better understanding may occur from listening to someone's story and being able to relate to it, or seeing it as a cautionary tale, and everything else in between. My point is that while each story is different, some have a common denominator, a common thread, if you will. For a few, this sense of familiarity can come from a nuance in a story, while others may find the whole story relatable. Oftentimes, this means a particular circumstance resonates with the listener. However, in the following two stories, this common thread is becoming less and less unusual. I'm speaking of technology. And while computers have been connecting people for some time now, I'm talking specifically about connecting people through the use of computers as it relates to the advent of DNA analysis. Computers have been available to the public since 1977, and DNA was discovered in the 1800s, not making great strides until the 1940s and 50s, and finally making its debut into forensic science in the capacity of solving crimes in 1986 in the UK. Without going into all the intricacies of DNA, I will say that, like all of technology, things evolve. And so did the use of DNA. And as it became more refined, companies began to realize an opportunity that could give the average person a method to discover who they are, where they came from, and even who they're possibly related to. They can even go as far as to tell you the percentage, with some degree of accuracy, the relevance to whom an individual is actually related to. Which brings us to our first story, sent to us from a gentleman in Japan named Coach John Sanctignan. He is quite an accomplished basketball coach, and with the following credits to his name. He was an NCAA basketball leading scorer, 85 and 86 season, not to mention University of California, Santa Cruz all-time leading scorer, professional FIBA player, Pac-12 coach, and FIBA coach. John is even an author with a book titled Take Your Shot, Make Your Play. He's also a seasoned entrepreneur, a global public speaker, and second-degree black belt. I've had the distinct pleasure of speaking with him, and he's an all-around hell of a nice guy. John was kind enough to share his adoption story with us, and he writes, "So this quest really began in thought since I first discovered I was adopted, let's say 10 years old, but not really knowing what that meant, only that I was different than others in the neighborhood and school. Then, as I got older, I had a chance to know who perhaps my birth parents were. On my final day at my mom's house, before I flew out to begin my career as a professional basketball player, she walks in the room crying, but with a piece of paper which she says is my birth mom's information, should I now want to find her. Of course, I had no intention of doing that, not wanting to hurt my mom's feelings, nor was I inclined to go look either. Yet I still had a longing to know who they were, but never went looking. Fast forward, of course, many years and contemplations, I decided to take a DNA test at 50 years old just to see what this DNA exam was all about, and I was blown away. It is such a remarkable way to get an idea of percentage of your heritage, where you came from, region, etc., and I was now all in to try to see if I could maybe locate my birth parents in this manner. Since the result had told me that I was from Spain and Mexico, specifically Chihuahua, I decided to really investigate this. One day, I remember my mom's boss out of the blue and reached out to him, wondering if he was still alive. He never responded until, ironically, I had returned back to Tucson, Arizona, where I was born, for a New Year's Eve celebration with my childhood friends. He calls me to say that he lives in Tucson and to come on by, which I did in that very moment. It was filled with storytelling. And again, he was the one responsible for me being adopted. As it turns out, he was born and raised in Nuevo Casas Grandes in Chihuahua, Mexico, in one of the Mormon colonies there. And that is why my mom asked him if he knew of any baby boy that would be up for adoption that she wanted. Mr. Hal Jones was his name, and he reached out and discovered that yes, I was both born and available. He said ultimately that I would have to go to Mexico to really know where I was from. Since I had no name and no photo, as I did not take that information from my mother many years prior when I had the chance, She since has passed on, so that information was forever lost. So I took Mr. Jones' advice and went to Mexico one day on my own. Not knowing anyone, just curious to discover where I was from, I met another coach through Facebook and shared with him that I was going to his city to recommend any hotel and the purpose of why I was going. And he offered to meet me and help. Mr. Victor Quinones spent each moment with me as we first went to discover if I had an updated birth certificate, maybe that would reflect who my birth parents were. I was able to get their certificate of birth, just no information on any name, other than my adopted parents' name on the certificate. So we went to discover where I would have been born, the hospital, and the doctors at the time who perhaps would have delivered me, and maybe speak to them or one of their sons. We went everywhere together. We went to look for the pharmacy, older people in the city, and asked them basically to find out what the procedure and process was like at the time, so at least I had a background knowledge of how I was given up for adoption. And that's how that first time went. I met certain people in the city. Everyone was fascinated by the story, and yet I wasn't auditioning for a parent. I wanted to be very clear that I was searching, but I didn't know exactly what I was looking for either. How is this going to happen? How was I going to discover anyone without a name or a photo? I left there content and happy, knowing where I came from and yet trying to discover more than ever where I came from. So I took another DNA test and then secured the services of someone in Provo, Utah, who was a search angel to help me find any of the records that I had on my DNA. But basically, it was the same story without really knowing who people are. I had no idea, and no one was really coming through on the DNA exam that were anywhere close to just being third cousins, and so I had no idea who they were, and I couldn't answer any of that. So one day, that search angel said, "Take a third DNA exam. There are many companies you never know." Meanwhile, I went back because I had an opportunity to have a further discussion, this time with the son of one of the doctors who delivered at the time and got to speaking with him. He tells me he is unable to have any record of delivery and name associated with who it was. Besides the fact that I have this DNA evidence, it's proving non-conclusive. But what he does is that he proceeds to tell me a story of a young man who 30 years before came to the city with a small photograph. He didn't speak any Spanish and was looking for his birth mother. He was adopted, went door to door, and spent weeks looking for her. So I asked if he found her, and the doctor said yes. He was able to find her. Now at this point, I feel like maybe it's a conspiracy. Maybe I'm not meant to find out who. This is a random guy who went all the way down there, no different than what I'm doing, except that he has a photograph in which I didn't. So again, I leave without the knowledge, but a little bit more information. And more people were very curious to the story and how I'm proceeding to continue to look essentially for a needle in a haystack. I returned back to the United States and had taken the third DNA exam. I got the results back, and for the first time, I now noticed there are two individuals who are listed as my first cousin and niece. And so that means my niece, my relative, my brother or sister's child. So I carefully manuscript an email to both women, trying to come across very polite and professional, and requesting a phone call so that I could speak to them. And after several days, they do respond to me, and both suggest that perhaps I should speak to their father. So I asked them to give their father my phone number. And again, after a few days, he does call me and proceeds to tell me that he believes that I am his brother. So I ask, what gives you that information or what gives you that feeling? He proceeds to tell me a story that he had been given up for adoption as a child. But 30 years ago, he decided he would go and look for our mother. He had a little photograph and he decided to cross the border. Despite not being able to speak Spanish, he went house to house and spent weeks trying to locate her, and eventually did. After all the niceties of meeting with our mother, he proceeds to ask if he has any brothers and sisters, and our mother at the time says yes to him. "Yes, you have two that are here," which he met and were under her care and guidance at the time, and another sister that was given up for adoption within Mexico. He went looking for her, and then she told him, "And you have a brother that was born May 6, 1965, also given up for adoption, but she didn't really know where." And they kind of took an educated guess that maybe it was Arizona or Nevada. I was blown away by that story, since that's what the doctor's son had shared with me. That was the same guy, and then he proceeded to continue to share that information with me, and from there, the quest was on full speed now. My brother's name is David, and he says that at that particular time, he ends up going to see all his brothers and sisters, and collectively gathers them all to say, "Let's go find our brother, whom they believe is me, in Phoenix, Arizona, Tucson, Arizona, or Las Vegas, Nevada." And they go searching for me. At the time, only David is a U.S. citizen, the others are not. So they cross illegally and drive to find me, which maybe at the time they possibly could have found me. However, I was in college, and even if they had discovered me, I don't think I was mature enough to have been able to understand the magnitude of that meeting at the time anyway. Now, given this information, I return back to Mexico, because now I have the names of my brothers and sisters in Mexico. I reached out to all of them. We have a conversation, and they provide me information, detailed information on our family tree, etc. I go and meet them all for the first time back again in Mexico. It was an unbelievable experience because all the nieces, nephews, significant others, spouses, and other family members all came out, and I got to meet my mother's sister. My mother and father had already passed away, but I met one of his nephews, and it was just remarkable to hear their stories, to know that's where I came from, and to see the similarities with my brothers and sisters and their children, sharing stories with me, and that their own father and mother would always say to them, "And don't forget, you have an uncle born May 6, 1965, somewhere. We just don't know where he's at." So as you can tell, this was totally a needle in the haystack story. I finally meet all the nieces and nephews, including the two that took this DNA exam. But if it were not for them taking the DNA exam, I may not have ever found them or found out who I was in terms of knowing any relatives when I meet them. They are married, and one of their mothers-in-law gave the gift of DNA exam to them as a prank, a Christmas gift joke, because they were light-skinned and their father was dark-skinned, and it was as if a joke to say, "You know, let's find out who you really are, because you don't look like your father." It was said in jest. Two out of the five daughters took the test. The others, when I met them, had the test still within their possession. It wasn't a joke. They literally had it. They just didn't take the test. But again, had they not taken the exam, I wouldn't have been able to find out who they really were. Fast forward, through all the persistence, this is what it took, and many roadblocks along the way. But for me to discover that, what did I have to lose? At the very least, I was going to know where I came from. The DNA exam was just fascinating to me. And as a result of just being persistent, I was able to find everything and where I came from. It's a remarkable story, to say the least. Well, thank you, John. I would have to agree. It is, in fact, a very remarkable story. Perhaps one day I will travel to El Salvador and find my family members. As you can see, DNA is an amazing tool. Another example of this wonderment comes from Patrick. He was gracious enough to send his story, and he writes, "I was adopted in North Carolina in August of 1970. My birth date is August 10th, and I was officially adopted in September of 1970. From an early age, I knew I was adopted. My adoptive mom was Japanese, and I didn't look at all Japanese, so there was no hiding the fact that I wasn't her son. I never really desired to search for my birth family during my childhood. I was raised in a very good home and was well taken care of. I think the only thing I wondered about was why. Why did my mom give me up? Was I not good enough? Did she not want me? When I asked my adoptive mom about any information she had on my birth mom, she told me my mom was very young when she had me and couldn't afford to take care of me, and also didn't want me. I would later find out that this was a lie. My adoptive mom was very controlling and protective of me and would do just about anything to keep me. Later in life, I would resent her for this. I also believe had I looked even slightly like my adoptive mom, she would have told me and others that I was her child. So how did I find my birth family? Well, that's quite a story. I actually had my mom's name as early as 2005, but because of being in the military and not really knowing where to begin, I really didn't pursue it. The state of North Carolina has sealed original birth certificates for adoptees, so I had no access to my real birth certificate. The only way you can get it is through a court order, and that's nearly impossible. In 2015, I began reading more and more articles of people finding their birth families, so I decided to give it a try. I joined a Facebook group for adult adoptees from North Carolina. I put in some basic info, and almost immediately, I got my birth mom's name, the same name I had back in 05. Then about 2 hours later, I got info on my maternal aunt and got her Facebook profile. When I looked at it, I saw she listed an email account. I put together a 2-paragraph email and must have read it 1,000 times. I told my wife that once I send this, there's no going back. My aunt sent back a response almost immediately, saying she really didn't have much information, but it was possible because she did remember my mom going away, but she didn't know the reason. She told me she would contact some family friends who may know. About 2 weeks later, my aunt called and confirmed that this was indeed my birth mother. She also told me that I had a sister, which I had always wondered about and wanted. I was overjoyed. My aunt told me she wanted to tell my sister Tracy about all this before I contacted her. Then in March of 2015, my sister reached out to me via Facebook. We talked about a lot, and then began talking every day, sometimes many times a day. When we first talked on the phone, we talked for over 3 hours. It was like we had always been family. I asked many questions about my mom to Tracy. She told me about my mom's stroke and her condition. I really wanted to meet my mom, but Tracy and I both felt it would be best to wait a while. I prayed a lot and even sent my mom Christmas gifts for Tracy to take to her. Then, right after Mother's Day, 2015, Tracy called me and said it was time for me to meet my mom. We set up a date, June 7th, to come down and meet her. My wife and son traveled with me to South Carolina and meet Tracy and her husband. We went to the nursing home and I stayed out in the hallway while Tracy was with my mom, asking her if she remembered having me. Initially, my mom didn't know, then eventually told Tracy, yes, she did give a child up for adoption, but didn't know whether it was a boy or a girl. Tracy told her, well, you had a boy, his name is Patrick, and he really wants to meet you. I came in the room and for the first time in my life, looked my mom in the face. It was pure joy. I cried like a little baby. Tracy was crying too. We visited with my mom for over 2 hours. Before I left, my mom asked when I was coming back and that she wanted to meet her grandson. The other thing that happened was that my mom and I spoke on the phone every day, and we still do. She tells me she loves me, and I tell her I love her. She called me on my birthday last year and wished me a happy birthday for the first time in my life. I never thought I would ever hear her say those words to me. Meeting my sister and my mom has changed my life in ways I never imagined. I knew going in there was a possibility my mom wouldn't want to meet me or want a relationship with me. It's a risk any time you go searching for your birth family, but for me, it was worth it. Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, John, for sending in those amazing experiences. I'm sure more than a few people can relate to both of these stories. If not, it may have given them the encouragement they needed to look deeper into their own story, and perhaps even take the path that DNA potentially offers. It's a very personal decision and may not be a good fit for everyone. I will say this, you have to be prepared, or as prepared as you possibly can be, for what, or even who, you may discover. Okay, that's it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you'd like to submit your own story like John and Patrick did, you can email me at theadoptiondoor@gmail.com. You can either record it yourself or write it out. If you have any thoughts about the show, I welcome those as well. I've set up a PayPal account, so if you like what I do and want to help me continue to do it by making a donation, I would be very grateful. Even a dollar would be amazing. You can send it via PayPal to the email address, theadoptiondoor@gmail.com. You can also support me by liking and subscribing to this show on your favorite podcast platform, or YouTube, or heck, why not both? So thank you in advance, and thank you for your listenership. It means the world to me. Once again, I'm your host, Andres, and I look forward to sharing your stories. Be good to yourself and those around you.